Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You guys, I am so excited. My new course on behavior, the Practical Behavior Approach, is officially done and ready to go. Enrollment is only open until April 30th. And if you are someone who is supporting a child with frequent challenging behaviors, listen in because this course is for you. This course was designed for any teacher, special ed or gen ed, clinician or parent working with a child with frequent negative behaviors. This course is going to prepare you with a comprehensive toolbox. You're going to have all the tools you need to prevent problem behaviors, respond when problem behaviors happen, and to build those missing skills. We go in depth into why behavior happens, looking at contributing factors like diagnosis, trauma, anxiety, and sensory needs. This is truly a cohesive course where strategies are rooted in the science of applied behavior analysis, but also rooted in trauma-informed practices. So you're going to have both perspectives to develop this really robust framework of strategies that is truly going to be effective. So if you are feeling burnt out, overwhelmed, or out of answers on how to support your kids, click on the link in the show notes and learn a little bit more about this course and how the training and all of the downloads and tools are going to really help support you on this journey to helping your child be successful. I can't fully express how excited I am to get this course in your hands. Click on the link in show notes. Let me know if you have any questions. And when you get started, let me know how it goes.
Hi, I'm Sasha Long, special ed teacher and board certified behavior analyst. Welcome to the Autism Helper Podcast. I'm here to explore different strategies to improve the lives of individuals with autism.
Welcome back to the Autism Helper Podcast. Today, I am chatting with Elizabeth Klein, and we are talking all about feeding therapy and food sensitivity. This is a challenge that a lot of kids face, being picky and selective about food to the point that this can play a negative role in their health, in their behavior, and this can really impact social opportunities as well. Elizabeth has a big passion in feeding therapy and feeding assessment, so much that she actually created the feeding assessment tool. Today, she shares what the feeding assessment tool is, what led her to create it, and how this tool can be useful by both parents and clinicians on really determining what goals we have for our kids when it comes to feeding. I myself parent some picky eaters, so this was really helpful for me to start to think about what are some good next goals for my own kids and how we can work on that generalization piece by just really small things that Elizabeth shares. So let's jump in and hear from Elizabeth Klein. Hi, Elizabeth. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
I'm excited to talk about picky eating because I think this is an issue for a lot of kids and especially children on the spectrum that I know a lot of teachers and parents and clinicians are working on. So I'm excited to have you on to talk about this topic.
Yeah, it's definitely a really big topic and one that's really impactful, not only on individuals with autism, but the whole community, their families, all the practitioners they work with. So.
Yeah, it really kind of bleeds into all these other areas if you're not, you know, eating and
absolutely
feeling, yeah, healthy.
Mm-hmm. You don't have a full belly, that can lead to a lot of problems.
Yeah, I mean, I know for myself.
Yeah, definitely.
So why is picky eating or, you know, highly selective eating more common for kids with autism?
Yeah, it's definitely something that's super, super common. I know I've worked in several different settings with individuals with autism and other disabilities. And almost every single time, you know, when you ask parents or you talk to their caregivers, the biggest issue that they talk about is eating, and not even just the food selectivity, but it can be other eating problems as well. You know, if they're, hyposensitive, maybe they just eat everything, mm-hmm. and that's not okay either. So yeah, eating problems are super, super common in autism. And I think one of the biggest reasons for that is the sensory issues. You know, everyone always talks about, oh, it's a texture issue, but it's also, you know, it could be a temperature issue, it could be a shape issue, a color issue. So all of those sensory factors definitely play a big role. And I think also just like the fixation on the routine and the sameness, you know, if you take a blueberry, you know, they taste kind of similar every time, but you don't know if that blueberry is going to be a little bit sour, a little bit sweet, a little bit squishy, a little bit crunchy. So that insistence on sameness and routine and the fixation on that can sometimes be really difficult for kids with autism, not knowing exactly what's coming, as well as just eating in general includes so many discrete behaviors that you have to learn, you know, from using utensils to chewing the food, asking for food, all of these different things. So eating itself is just such a big, massive undertaking to really master.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I think as you were talking about that routine and sameness, I noticed this with my own kids who are not on the spectrum, but just from a parenting perspective, I tend to kind of give them what I know they'll like. And then we're kind of eating the same chicken nuggets every week. And then if I buy a different brand, they're like, whoa, 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 what's this? And it's like, you know, because it's just not their routine, which I didn't even realize I was creating.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that's something that I always say from the beginning, you know, it's not really a solution to people who are already in this conundrum, but if you're starting out, you have like a young child, I encourage just as much opportunities for generalization as possible. So like, always put it on a different dish, you know, don't have the red plate be the chicken nugget plate, just always put it on a different dish, flip the food upside down, or, you know, cut it in different ways, just do as many different things as you can so that they're comfortable with a little bit more variety among those foods that you're feeding them.
Yeah, that's such a simple thing that we wouldn't even think of to do with our little
boy. Right, yeah.
So why is this, you know, focusing on eating and increasing the variety and types of foods that kids are eating important? Like, what implications does picky eating have?
It's so important. Obviously, food is, you know, really, really important to everyone, just as far as health, social interactions, being able to participate in, you know, society with everyone else involves being able to eat. So eating definitely has huge implications. It impacts the family greatly. You know, most of the time parents have other children. Sometimes they have children who have disabilities as well, other children with disabilities. So being able to have everyone eat the same food or a similar food or just eat something in general is so, so important to just the family structure. Being able to, you know, serve something and then, you know that your child will sit down and eat it and you don't have to sit there and prompt them through it, or they're not going to throw up or throw their food on the ground or whatever it may be. So definitely, I think the family function is a huge reason that picky eating is important to address. But then also, yeah, the social interactions and the stigma that come with not being able to eat. You know, if we're expecting them to be able to attend social gatherings where there's probably going to be food present, if we're expecting them to sit in the cafeteria and eat among their peers, all of these different things, then they need to master certain skills and be able to eat a, you know, a certain repertoire of foods so that they can, you know, look the same as just any other child who is eating their lunch in the cafeteria and not have any really socially stigmatizing behaviors or, you know, significant problems with sensory issues as they're going about those things. And then, of course, the health. The health is a huge one. Food variety definitely impacts health. But it's not necessarily one and the same. For instance, some kids might have fewer foods in their repertoire, but that doesn't mean that they're less healthy, because those foods might be, you know, some great sources of protein or vitamins or whatever it may be. Whereas other kids might have more foods in their repertoire, but be less healthy because those foods are not as nutrient dense. So that definitely isn't one and the same, but obviously food variety is going to have an impact on the overall health. And so that, you know, leads us into the discussion about like setting events and, you know, if someone's not getting their physical needs met, how can that impact the behaviors? So it bleeds out everywhere for sure.
Do you notice that when kids have like a smaller set of foods that they eat, that they tend to be more unhealthy foods? Like, let's say I only eat a handful of things, but those tend to be like more processed, less like fruits and vegetables. Does that tend to be the case?
I would say as a general, probably. And I think that's some that's a great thing for the feeding assessment tool to help diagnose as well, is just kind of like what the patterns of eating are and what those patterns of the various foods are. Because some kids really fixate on, we talk a lot about like the beige and brown foods.
Yeah.
Some kids are like anything as long as it's a beige and brown. or, you know, they have like certain patterns of things that they're more willing to eat. And so then that sometimes means that, yes, it is more processed, or maybe it's more of a certain type of food. So I think the feeding assessment tool is just a really great way to like recognize some of those things.
Yeah. So let's hear about the feeding assessment tool. And I'd love to hear kind of, you know, what motivated you to create this?
Yeah, absolutely. So the feeding assessment tool, I guess I'll start with what motivated me to create it. I've worked, like I said, in a variety of contexts with individuals with disabilities, specifically autism. And currently am the clinical supervisor over an ABA program where I think every single child that we work with has probably had some type of eating issue, or parents have asked me a feeding question. So it's just something that is constantly seen. And there are some resources out there. There's, you know, feeding therapy from SLPs and OTs, but there's just not very much for kids who are food selective eaters. There's a lot for like, if your child can't swallow, if your child has these really severe oral motor deficits, all of those things. But what about the kids who can eat, but just don't? That was kind of where I was seeing the issue. So I kind of pursued some training in that specifically. And nutrition is something that myself and my family are just passionate about in general. And it's always been, you know, an interest of ours. So I pursued like interdisciplinary training so I could learn more about like the SOS approach, which is, you know, most commonly used by speech pathologists. And just, you know, some other kind of like the history of feeding therapy and where we're at now, because it's something that I think is going to really grow in the coming years. And so I decided to develop this tool primarily to use with my own clients, but then also to offer to other parents and practitioners who needed to know more about their food selective eaters, as well as help develop more systematic goals, because everything I was seeing was kind of not as data driven as, you know, other aspects of behavior or things that we measure. It was a little bit more subjective, or, you know, it was like, what food do we start with? I don't know. How about eggs? And they're just going to pick a food. And so I wanted something that was going to be a little bit more systematic. So the feeding assessment tool is a virtual, comprehensive, super easy to use assessment tool designed for parents and practitioners. So if you're an OT, a BCBA, an SLP, a nutritionist, anything like that, this could be beneficial for you, as long as you are helping a child or adult with their feeding goals. It goes through all of the sensory features of foods. So it'll measure the food groups, the food textures, the food flavors, food shapes, food colors, food temperatures, and give you a score for each. So you can kind of notice the patterns of like, wow, they eat a ton of blue and purple foods, a lot of flat foods, but they have almost no oblong foods in their repertoire. Things like that. And then you can kind of make those more specific goals from that, as well as it measures social eating behaviors, eating compliance, eating related communication skills, physiological and motor capabilities, so that you can see those as well, the common eating issues and eating behaviors that come up with autism as well. And then you can set a goal that's like, instead of just the child's going to, you know, increase their food variety, you can say the child will consume foods across at least three flavor profiles, textures, and colors by this date. So something that's a little bit more objective and clear to kind of guide that feeding therapy process.
That's interesting. I didn't, you know, you don't think about how many different ways you can group foods, like temperature, texture, shape. I mean, there's so many different ways you can, you know, come at it from.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then when you're picking goals, does this kind of help you? Like, I love that goal of like, you know, across three food groups. Does it then give you some ideas of foods in those groups that you could kind of like start with?
Yes, certainly. So the first part of the test is basically like a food inventory. So the respondent will mark, you know, let's say they're given carrot sticks. That's an oblong, orange, crunchy, earthy food. So that's going to contribute to their score for all of those categories. So let's say we're seeing that they scored in about like the 60% for oblong and crunchy foods, then they might suggest carrot sticks be where we start. You know, because you want to start with a food that's in that 60 to 80% range, rather than starting with like something that's really, really out of reach.
See, I think, I mean, I'm like reflecting on my own parenting as I have some picky eaters myself, but that is my problem often is I go to like something they like, I'm like, here, let's eat chili. And they don't eat anything like chili. And they're like, no.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, starting with something that's more familiar in their repertoires.
Yeah. Yeah. So the low hanging fruit is a great strategy of just, you know, you want to be successful with something. So sometimes it's hard to see if you're just looking at the child, what's going to be more or less likely for them to eat. But when you have an assessment tool like this, you can look at the graph and see, oh, wow, it's really not likely that they're going to have a spicy food. But it's actually, you know, semi-likely that they might try something sour. Let's try something sour first, have them be successful with that. And eventually maybe we'll get to spicy. But it just allows you to be a bit more intentional about how you move through that picky eating therapy.
Love that. And then do you re-give this assessment on a regular basis or do you like do it once and develop your goals?
It's similar to what you would do with any other assessment. So if you did like another adaptive behavior assessment or something like that, you definitely want to do it at the beginning to get a baseline. If you're a parent and you want to use it, it kind of helps answer that question of like, does your child need feeding therapy? If you're not quite sure, is this like in the typical range of picky eating or is this, you know, really outside the norm? And then if you're a practitioner, you know, for myself, I always like to reevaluate my clients like every 6 months or so, depending on their needs and how much progress they've made. You might do it more or less often. But I think it's just good to continue to measure those things and see if anything's changed.
I love that this is something that a parent can use. That's not, you know, I think so often it's like there's these big assessments that are kind of tricky even for clinicians, but something that's user-friendly that a teacher, a parent, someone that, you know, doesn't necessarily have an ABA background could jump in and utilize.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that feeding therapy is not necessarily pigeonholed into one specific discipline. So I wanted something that was going to be useful, you know, for SLPs, OTs, BCBAs, and then parents as well, because sometimes, you know, you might not be pursuing feeding therapy, but you might be trying to do some interventions on your own.
Yeah, that's true.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thinking about teachers in the classroom setting that have students with, you know, really picky eating, how can they support these kids? And then how can they support parents and caregivers that are trying to, you know, increase food variety? What's the kind of the teacher's role in this, as you see?
That's a really great question. And I think that's, again, a topic that's going to be coming up more often in the future. I know that I worked on a case where there was two students in special education with autism. And we went back and forth about, was there going to be feeding therapy at school? Was there not? Was there going to be? Was there not? And ultimately, they ended up not receiving feeding therapy services at school. Whether they needed it, I think is still kind of up for debate. But I think, again, a tool like this is something that might be able to kind of help parents advocate for if some feeding interventions are necessary at school. Because when it comes to like teaching, for feeding therapy services to be delivered at school or for feeding interventions to be in the IEP, you know, it needs to be something that's really impactful on their ability to make social connections or ability to learn, ability to function in the school setting. So if a child is able to just sit there in the lunchroom and, you know, eat alongside their peers, no problems, great. But if their picky eating is resulting in, you know, serious behaviors at school or an inability to learn, you know, maybe they're not eating lunch and then they have a lot of behaviors and can't learn after lunchtime. Then in those cases, obviously, we need to provide some interventions. So I think a few things that you can do as a teacher would just be to collaborate with the family as far as lunches. Usually there's only one meal eaten at the school. Sometimes it's two. Sometimes kids have breakfast as well. But really collaborating with parents about, you know, did they eat breakfast? Are they eating breakfast here? What's for lunch? And paying attention to those setting events, because if they didn't eat breakfast, then they might need a few snacks before they get to lunchtime to make it through. Or if they had a huge breakfast, then maybe don't try to use food as a reinforcer at 9 a.m. So really being in communication with the parents about just kind of their feeding status, what they brought for lunch, and how how parents want them to go about giving those foods. And then again, with the generalization piece. So always making sure that you have as much generalization as possible and avoid the really, really rigid structure. Because for instance, if they're used to only having food delivered by the teacher on their yellow plate, then when a substitute comes and delivers them food on their green plate, they might not eat it. They might just throw it on the ground. So really paying attention to those generalization pieces, telling them, you know, you're going to eat at this table today. You're going to eat at that table today. You're going to sit with this peer. You're going to sit with that peer. Just as many different, you know, small opportunities for variety that you can capitalize on.
Yeah, I think that's such an easy way to just, even like the seating, like you said, or the plate or whatever, could to just kind of start to build in that generalization piece, as you said.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think something else too is eating with competing distractions in the environment can be really challenging for some kids, particularly if they have a comorbid diagnosis of ADHD or something like that. And so maybe starting to like play some soft background music on some days, not every day, or, you know, having different things going on in the environment so they can start to get used to, like, you know, if there's a different sound, if there's a different person, you know, if you're seeing something different, we're still going to continue eating as normal.
Yeah. Speaking of competing distractions, it's kind of taking this conversation in a different direction from school. But, you know, I know a lot of parents rely on an iPad or a screen during meal times. And What's your kind of advice or perspective on that, if that's something to avoid or to be okay with sometimes?
That's a great question. And I think in today's world is something that probably can't be altogether avoided. You know, you pretty much can't take someone to a restaurant without there being a screen somewhere. So I think it can't altogether be avoided. If possible, yeah, I think it's great if people can eat without having a screen. I think that's the most independent that they can be. But for some people, I think as a first step, you kind of do what you have to do. So if they're not eating at all, if they have great struggles with sitting calmly in the chair, then yeah, maybe we do have to introduce a screen or, you know, reinforcers, things like that for getting them to sit calmly at the table and eat their food, because that's the priority, I would say. I think eating is, you know, obviously really at the top of the list of important behaviors for people to exhibit. And then that's something that you'd want to fade away over time. That shouldn't be something that you want to have them be reliant on for the rest of their life. But if it is necessary in order to get them to eat, then I think then in that case, you do what you got to do.
Yeah. I think like every parent was like, yes, tell me that I can do it for a little bit.
Yeah. As long as you have plans to, I think, fade it away, you know.
And then, and like tricky follow-up question. So, you know, parents, caregivers that are listening, they're like, okay, we need the fading piece now. Where do you start with that fading? If a kid's super reliant on having that iPad there and out when they eat, what's like that first step on fading?
That's a great question. So I think one thing that I would start with is, let's say they're just super reliant on watching a video the entire time they're eating. You can still leave that video in front of them, but you can start by pausing it. Maybe like every couple of minutes, you just pause it, have them take a couple bites, chew and swallow, and then you hit play again. So the picture is still there, the screen is still there, but it's not actually playing. I think that would be the first step in fading.
Yeah, I love that advice, because they're not like taking it away. It's like, you know, wait, I was in the middle of that. It's just, it'll come back. It's right here.
Exactly. And as the pauses get longer and longer, the screen gets further away, eventually they start to not really attend to it very much anyways. And then they don't, you know, react as strongly when it's actually physically removed.
Yeah, that's great advice. I love this. Okay, Elizabeth, so where can people go to learn more from the feeding assessment tool or utilize this tool?
So yeah, you can visit our website. It's feedingassessmenttool.com. All the information is right on there, but if for some reason you have any questions, you can absolutely reach out. My email is just contact@feedingassessmenttool.com, and I'm happy to answer any questions by parents or practitioners about how to use this assessment or anything like that. But yeah, basically, there's two styles to the assessment. One is just the food selectivity, and the other is the comprehensive. The only difference is the comprehensive includes the eating-related behaviors as well. So if you're maybe an adult who's curious about your own behaviors, you might just choose to use the food selectivity. But for the most part, for practitioners or if you're measuring behaviors of children with autism, I recommend using the comprehensive.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Elizabeth. This has been super helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Autism Helper podcast. If you liked what you heard and want to hear more, hit subscribe. It would mean a lot to me if you left some feedback. Whether I'm working one-on-one with a student, doing a podcast like this one, or presenting for a PD, my goal is always to provide as much value as I can. So your feedback really helps me make sure I'm doing just that. If you have other topics you'd like me to cover, leave in the feedback or message me on social media. You can follow me at The Autism Helper on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Pinterest, or visit my website, theautismhelper.com. Thanks again for listening.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Having the right resources for your classroom is essential to making sure your classroom is running smoothly. At the Autism Helper Shop, we have all of the resources you need to make sure you have the behavior, communication, and curriculum supports for your students. Within our shop, we have adapted books, task cards, resources aligned to the VBMAP and the ABLES, behavior plan flowcharts, data sheets, curriculum. Everything you need, whether you are an early childhood teacher or a high school teacher, we have all of the resources that will meet those students' needs. So head over to shop.theautismhelper.com to check out all of our resources.